that, I've heard it, random acts of violence and random acts of kindness, random acts of poetry, a wonderful thing to observe. I spoke earlier about O'Vale and privilege. Thank you very much to the advice to read here, and also the White House in London. If I were to think that I were to see writing or reading, and I read these two venues, it would be sufficient. Because it has, I haven't been involved in Poetry Ireland for a long time. It is something that I have tried to support, and I know the support is not sufficient from a national organisation. I say that publicly, because there's something right in the values of a place that can last 4.5 years of one night, like the White House in Limerick. There's something very deep involvement, and it's nothing more than us participating in our own culture. And thank you very much for inviting me. I was born in Cavan, living in Dublin, and hence the Irish expression of this as Cavan or Go Cushme. We don't forget where our kind of spirit started, and whilst I love the city of Dublin, I can only think of myself living along the Fall River, tributary of the Erne, the Annadhi, and I can think of myself a different creations or incarnations living along that river. And I really think for me that, you know, speaking about ourselves, we speak about the relationship we have to the landscape or with people. And when I certainly write, that for me poetry is writing myself in some way in relation to the landscape and in relation to the people that I have in profession. Just to paint the picture, a small village that it is, propelled some scouting recently with Sean Gallagher from within that place. It's a small rural area of little means, but has had a big house, like a bunch of college, which I just lived across from. The bridge divided the big house from our own very small house. But I've lived kind of dual existence of playing around the big house and living in the small house. So the promise of the peasant and grandiose at the same time. But the river has at least influenced and grown up. The first poems I read are River poems. I read the four of them. One is Fountain Pen, it's not a short one. Next was the river itself, the river Annadhi. And Tale of the Race is just the very end of that race. There's a lot of myth and folklore about it. It was the part of where the river actually turned deep, and there's all sorts of stories of balances and tarsus and horses and then disappearing into it. And the last one is Pike, the stable diet of the people, and much to fish of the passage. Fountain Pen. Fountain pen, I kiss her lips when words desert me. Trickle of water at the hazel man's feet in the dry riverbed. River Annadhi. Morning opens its nostrils on the river plain. Bring the dry ice chorus of cumulus nimbly drifting over water and river fields. Nothing stirs, every sleeping thing sleeping, earth and sky straining to be one. Through wet grass I trace a dewy path, down tree roots, slithery steps, to the water's last lap. Truth lies in this riverbed, where stones are smooth while the waters flow, and boughs arch achingly low to kiss the river run. I take into my hands all the water my hands can hold. Tale of the Race. Brought up on the howl of the wind, made lonely by trees, by the eyes of the bridge streaming. One dry to take the overflow, one blocked up, storing wood for winter heat. Into a V we stepped as traffic passed, and upstream on our way up on cold stone, we watched the river run either side of an island to the tail of the race. Our heads were white waters swirling, and such was the movement that no one can say for certain that an island or bridge, water or child really moved. Any word Oxford or Oxford? The movement was just in
Sydney.
The
word the Oxford.
I was amazed that people weren't familiar with the word Oxford or something like that.
It wasn't your arm, it's your arm, it was like, it's your Oxford.
Pike. There was, in the area that I lived, there was a cooperative store. There was a creamery, and there was a mill, so the cultural college, there was a building company thing, which employed hundreds of people. I thought it was for hundreds of more checks, and every Friday, cashed in village, and that's just completely off from that. And so, this part of the river ran by the mill. Pike. Beyond the mill marsh, the river takes a turn to the deep. Dark pike. Deep. Pike looking up at us, looking down at them. Meniscus eyes dead eyeing us. Thread rays of tea, clench wide open. Our people hate pike long before we had time of count or something. My father brought one home on a stick hook, just like the tick our teachers made in our copies at school. They say around here, the likes of it was never seen before. They say around here, the likes of it will never be seen again. Still, I can see its scarlet gills, slime gulping for air, desperately trying to talk to its own. Poems, I suppose, first collections or second collections or first collections usually deal with family relationships and working as I do in education. I can see more and more the vital part of the relationship of boy and man, being a father, and knowing that the boy can only be initiated if I'm not quite a father, and that we had lots of good setups and communities where the boys met lots of different people. And when the official history is written of any place, it will never say that you travelled one time with your father fighting, nor will it ever say that you, for some reason, inherited that intimacy and brought your own sons on a bike. And I travelled on a bike with my father on, at that time, a crossbar. Your arse was very sore from travelling the crossbar. And when I brought my own sons on the bike, and I've gone through an association with the caucus of Sherpa, and the old Sherpa across for 12 years, and they were very familiar sitting on the seat on the crossbar. I was much more comfortable. But Paddy Hayes was no different than any other village growing up. I have to say that living on a border is a very curious place. It was just by the hills, just a few miles down the Murray, a place called Morgan, Lady Kelly. She was in Fernanda, across the border. It had a few bomb people killed there, but it was incredible to be so close to and intimate at a physical level of a place that witnessed so many deaths. And at the same time, the population on the southern side seemed to go on quite easily with everything. And that physical place was a strange place, and I'd say it's abstract and poetic. The other thing too that I noticed, and it's only in hindsight, the people who didn't drink, they were seen as complete oddities. I would say that 2/3 of the village was drunk, mostly dead. And that has its own merriment and its own joy, but it also is so downside in terms of perception and how things go. So I don't mean to lecture, but I just thought of this, you know, looking back, that for a lot of villages, we were drunk half the time. And those who weren't drunk, they were seen as perceptions and skewed. But this poem is about my father and his bike, and it's called We Headed Home Together. We headed home together. The saddle, wide and leathery, held the seat of his trousers. The crossbar held my bony frame, and I shunted from one thigh to another to keep my balance, ease the hurt. I felt my head against his chest, watched my sandaled feet, his big shoes on the pedals, rimmed spoke of rubber. The road ran by the one tree cross, the river, the bridge, the strait, and the lean into the incline of the church brae brought his big body up and down. Up and down, I heard him heave. I heaved and bent in rhythm to ease his strain. His pincer grip on the handlebars, my orbit in motion. On to Auschwitz. The villagers had their own ways with intimacy that laid down the indulgence of the attempt. In for the one, he would say, to quench the truth. Sunday mass goers had forgotten the dinner, match supporters in for the post-mortem. The one wandered in to many, the root, the bread and wine down the glen. Poker by the fire would rekindle the dying day, sweet afternoon smouldering on steaks, scattered on tables, half crowns brown with yellow nicotine. Outside, I held the bike, propped it against the window, climbed its big frame, sat in the saddle, tiptoes tipping the petals. Smoke billowed out the up and down sash window. They fed me a silencing procession of Pepsi and Perry crisps until I could take no more. When the night was drip dry, the anyone that his home is to go to was announced. They filed out in ones and twos, each momentarily more certain in their uncertain world. We headed for home together. I walked the bike at an angle to keep it upright. My father completed the circle with his own dark tilt. The bike, I worked with a photographer and ethnographer who was studying local villages and places, and she took pictures of villages around Ireland, and looking at it through the lens, she looked at what was happening during the 80-year Kent Tiger times, that epoch, Steve was happening to her. And she took her camera, and having a learned eye, she took it at the tilt of a stranger coming to the village. And some of the villagers didn't like it. The big house was actually taken from the foreground of a rubbish chip, and different places had a new aperture. And when a new aperture is brought in to the local villagers, the locals don't like it, and sometimes people rise up. And anybody that knows heaven, it can have a dark old man, and it can get very troublesome. And I've known it and witnessed it. It took a wonderful photograph, which I thought, and it opened an exhibition of our photographs, and people were invited, 50 international artists to do print work in response to the photographs, and I was asked to do a poem, and I responded just to one of the pictures, which was a very old, rusted bike, mangled under a tree, and it wasn't certain what the tree was. So this poem was in response to that. It's called Chain. And it's about that sense of clarity, the bike that it's not clarity of chain. So, how come no one told me where my father's bike went? I suppose it went the way of the rest, left in some outhouse, but the legs lost the power to pedal, or someone said that the roads weren't safe anymore. Left to lie against a brown, leaky wall, her galvanized, never matched up to the slate. Slow, trip,
across the track. Never ending chain, not on its own, twisting with the will to move once more. My father, like most from men of his time, loved to listen to the radio on Sunday. He dare not trespass across even the area or near it when the football match was on. But if you don't have him, you don't have much to cheer about. If you go back to 1947, the city ball would be carried in the Polo Grounds in New York. So the Ulster Championship was the big one, because it's having one of the first Ulster Championships. And both when it was on the radio, then it was one had to observe as a child a certain decorum, not ask too many questions, and certainly not trespass associated with the radio. And I read this one. It was back a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, right before you were commissioned poems to your radio, all things for radio, this was one of those that you wrote. This one's called In Search of a Signal. And I use the word meniscus. Meniscus means that kind of top of the board that you see, kind of film, substitute, and so the book and the other radios. In Search of a Signal. Who changed the fecal station? Will you get up and turn on the match, will you? Once a week, I try to tune in, and what do I get? Silence would fall, limbo on airwaves, interference becoming part of the transmission. I don't know, he would say. The sounds would sing a cappella as he tracked highway from Hilversum to Prague, Oslo, back and forth he would go impatiently, the meniscus tracker moving, but finding no match between us. I don't know, he would repeat. But I did know, even back then. I had been playing with the band, medium wave, long wave, and my father's very, very short wave. I had changed the frequency forever, pushed me and him beyond that station. Many years later, on a bed racked with pain, I washed his tired feet, massaged the dry rot out of his oil. We tuned in together to a new wave. The signal was strong, intense to be precise. And now that he's gone, I repeat to myself as a man, I don't know. An act of witnessing the death of a father is a very precious one. The force will not have the time. I got a rude awakening when I did a poetry workshop at Hall Meeting. And people were writing poems about father and death and all that. And she just said to a few people happy night, she just said, everyone's father dies. So she won't write a poem, I wouldn't. Because she says there's a lot of good poems out there. If you feel the inflation, write it. And I thought it was good. Something to write them the most brilliant ever. But it's that to pay homage to what has gone before. And it's one of the things certainly there's a read on the finish off tonight is that I wouldn't be so thinking minded to think, you know, that my poems are anything major or original. They come from somewhere, they're in my own voice, but they come from great records, great poems, and I have poems that, like mantras, I read from time to time. This is a nice, a big wind, but a little good one. Windfall. On the night of the big winds, they brought them home. I woke next morning to find my oak, my ash, all rolled up in one, hewn to the ground. The fall revealed different side, underbelly, underside, underworld, an underworld of stones of clay, flesh and bones of the earth, thick canopy of leaves shared, sturdy boughs protected, roots to the ground, earthly, snarl of twisted wood along the trunk, a out to pray. And then when he was going out, there was a sense, it was strange, he liked to live his final days and watched it in a room. And suddenly there was an incredible surge by the family to decorate the room, even though he had only a few days left. And it's incredible some of the things that come in with death, and that it's a very privileged place. I was really privileged to get the photograph taken of John Daniel Carey, who was an American photographer, and he was really fascinated by the Huguenot graveyard. And to get your photograph taken with the background of a gravestone, I thought it was a tremendous privilege just to be somewhere where people have gone before. But the sense of him going was, you know, let the wind in, he used to be free. Let the wind in. My father's room was decorated in brighter colours than he'd been used to. Old furniture, dusted down for last days. Beside his bed, false teeth, redundant molars, incisors lost colour, dried flowers dried out, no sec, prepulsive, dupe-like, pharmaceutical gods of the twisted and knotted bush. Open the window. Let the wind in. Messenger to another world. Free him from four walls. Feed him a fine vegetable. I'm going to find you. I'm good. Okay. One thing I think that we're really good at is kind of celebrating the coming together of people's marriages and like that. Sometimes I think that for a land that has gone through multiple eruptions, both personally and community, that we completely lack the idea of evolving ritual, creating ritual. We hand over to the church, and somebody said that sometimes if you go to a ritual, you go to the ritual, and by going to it, you've spoken before about the ritual, so there's something at the planning. You go to the ritual, you go through it, and when you come out at the other end of that ritual, you're supposed to be a changed person. So when you go to the next ritual, you're not the same as last week, so maybe you can't have the same ritual. And it's one of the things that people talk about in churches, like, it's the same thing, the same thing over and over again, there's no major transformation. I feel that one of the things around breaking up or breaking down mental health, people breaking down to go through really tough times, but we lack, we're not blaming people, but we lack ritual to bring us through. So having gone through, as we all have, the kingdom niche of not of the difficult times, it's really important for our transformation and sequence again. There was a poem called Breaker's Yard. And I like it because it was placed in Tavern. You know, I pay never in your car. There's no loss of it. It had hydrolasted suspension. And when the things broke, somebody shoved something into it, dropped an egg into it, when it steamed up. It was always ways of fixing things. It was always a breaker jar. It was always something, scraping with the local place. You could always go for bits and pieces and parts. So somehow, you were never stuck. There was a community of bits that could see you through. And it's like, you know, a human level, you know, we all go through certain things, and Jesus, it was only the bit harness where you had it and somebody else hadn't got it or gone through it, or could just say a kind word or bring it through. And it does happen. Loads of time. It's just something I think very strongly about, and I have been involved in education schools, trying, you know, to concentrate something on the ritual. This was called Breaker's Yard. Two wooden beams for a workbench. A slick of oil seeping through the grain. A vice, mouth wide open, with word better parts to come. A calendar stuck on large. Tongue stained from leaping. And an invoice book, pink and white, alternate pages undisturbed. Phone line no connection. The silver dislodged, ear piece listening. The mouthpiece talking to itself, but no one around. Everything wrenched apart in the yard, standing in disconcerted piles, each with its own. Fagin's yard kept us all the way, and all the cars were the travellers, the two men rides. There's the point at which things happen to us, good and bad, and it comes down to an after moment, and that moment can either be to go one way or the other. You go through to some resistance, or you go to breakdown, or you go, I don't know what it is, I just know that in thinking about it more and more, there is the moment. And in separation, which all separations are difficult, it's the moment of going that you have to think. It becomes momentous. First part is the losing part. The second part is the second poem. And when I said about ritual, you know, when somebody gets married, I give that sound. When somebody dies, and you think in all the circumstances, people don't appreciate their help. You talk to them, and they look after you. When you separate or divorce, or you're homeless, you're saying, people don't talk to you. And people don't do the same thing. I have lost more friends. I didn't have to do it. It's amazing. I find it the most ambiguous thing I face in my life, and I can't understand it. The only thing that I can say is that maybe it reminds me of a part of the life, and I'm a witness to a part of the life that they don't and that I'm tired of rescuing people that I know a lot. Cargo. This is about certain woman alone. It's in five short pieces. Cargo. One. So many clothes you wear this winter. Cannot feel your body heat under so many layers. Two. We live in separate rooms now. You on your side of the wall, me on mine, both measuring distance. Walls are thin. I hear you breathe. Out, in, out, then in. Three. From another floor, you turn on your radio. I turn on mine. Music rises, begins to swell. Stereophonic in the stairwell. Five. Subcutaneous. I have a thin layer under your skin, and you are thin layer under mine. But all the exfoliation, deep cleansing, are not removed. The cargoes are divided, lies in the hold of two separate ships now. Logbook open, destination written, and high seas. And the poem to follow that is, where are the mourners? Where are the mourners? Now that this day has come, when all is said and done, it's down to the arc of an opening and closing door. The passage through, the dare not look back moment of going, the latch, tick clacking behind, and the unmistakable sound shut. Flagstone and granite, two steps. Down a path, and out a black garden gate. An electric saw winds its way through timber on a building site in the valley. And somewhere, autumn grass is surrendering to an all over today. I finish with a poem. Any lines? Heavy. What's your heavy? Maybe it is. That'd be late.
This is one that I was talking to too early. I don't know whether it's fiction or poem, whatever. But I wrote it back a while ago because I have been for a long time writing about crows and living in cabins, living in Riley, there were lots of crows. I was always fascinated by school as well too. They would sometimes come down and they'd pick the bread out of the children and eat it. Somebody said to me earlier, or cattle crows. But the crow, this one is about, I won't announce it too much, just in case you're trying to. Robbed by somebody, find out how to rob them back. That's the Robin Hood. The Robin Hood energy is one that I really feel that we should encourage. If we've been robbed, and a lot of us have been robbed, you know, there's a huge amount of conflict, but if we've been robbed, it's finding somewhere creatively, this may be the way of robbing it back. But if that energy, the trickster energy, and she had it in buckets for us. This is a four-part poem. It's called Pig Sweet. When things were rough, she started rearing pigs. Now, pigs, you know, they smell, they stink. But there's money in bacon. There's money in bacon in town. And there was no kind of airs and graces. She used to don the wellies, and she used to carry, I remember, sow and wainer, it's called, wiener, to the sow. She used to carry it in, across the road, in front of the green, children and teenagers growing up. The mother carried stuff across the road, and we had, so there was this whole kind of discharge with the mother, but she had some spirit. But there was a man called the Crow Brady, who ran the local hotel, the White Horse, and there's no relation to it, but he was a pig dealer, and he made lots of money, and he was a trickster in himself. And it was, I as a child, I remember it vividly, the layout between the two of them. And this poem is in four parts. It's called Pig Sweet. The first one is pigging. The second one is dressing the pigs. Does anybody know the term dressing the pigs? Now, dressing the pigs was the polite term for deballing the pigs. Okay? So that term was used it was, do you know the Bordizzo? The Bordizzo was the squeezer for the cattle. It was a similar one for the pigs. I just think you're a great education. That's dressing the pigs, so that you know the context. And the other is the Crow Brady entering the yard. And the other one is the end part is the deal. Pig Sweet. My mother reared pigs by hand, big land-raised pigs, one of the colour, heat and light of an infrared bulb. Metal crate, big sow on her side, tits falling to the ground, heavy with milk.
nudging, climbing one over the other, butting and voraciously champing, leaking milk, side snouting onto straw. Brushes of bristle and bony backs, opening and rising, feed after feed. Dressing the pigs. Smith of the penknife flick and metal bag Wilkinson's sword laid between the lips. Cut a line between two humps under the skin, sit and scoop out mercury balls onto a metal plate. Sluice them into a metal bucket, then onto a dunghill, and the balls, jelly-like in testicular light, catches the eye of a magpie, who pulls and teases its delicate muscularity apart. One for sorrow, two for joy, skywards, dressing the pigs, dressing their necks. Three, the crow Brady. Brady the pig dealer enters the yard. Big leathery back, big leathery black boots elasticated at the side, black mane of hair falling down, brush of hand sick back on the crown. The crow Brady, caw caw. The crow Brady, caw cawing its price, playing it down, preambling with, pigs are slow of the ear. Aye, pigs are slow in the ear, but never fear, Crow Brady, aye, the crow is here. The pigs are the only things that are slow then, my mother would say. Aye, you never lost it, man. You never had it to begin with. Then the crow would dance around, price tags falling from his mouth. You'll take this, I won't. You'll take that, I won't. You'll end up with nothing. Me last words, I drown them first. You drive a hard bargain, Mrs. Connolly. You drive a big car, Mr. Brady. The intimacy of the deal would play itself out along these lines. You take what I have in my hand for the 12th. Crozers lay a laser eye on the little. Depends on the size of your claw. Any man to take will be happy. I'm not any man. For I was accustomed to judging the game by the aperture of the claw. His averted eye is seesaw disclosing shuffle from side to side, the feigned departure. We'd shaken it, he push. Shaken it? You'd be the death of me, poor Billy, she'd say, taking the money. The death of me and half the country. She could pay it too. The death of you and half the country. How is it keeping you all alive, Mrs. Patterson? Ah. Off you go. I'm tailing it out the gate. I'll be back for the 12 tomorrow. The deal. And the next day, the Crow Brady's driver would arrive. Horizontal lats on a lowered tailboard, but the hoof grip litter and skitter their genuflected balls up onto a trailer. That night in the bar, big black boot on a stool. I'm no man's fool, you know, no man's fool. He puffed about the bargain. Got them for a song, he would sing, and the boom of his voice around the bar would ring. Next day he arrived, and he crowed and he crowed. The mother slipped in and went, one short of an old, one short of an old. On the point of somebody else's poem, that is something that just finished with a Dennis O'Driscoll poem, some of which you may know. And it brings me an excellent tune every morning that is maybe the last. The Habits to good poems. Someone is dressing up for death today. Change of skirt or tie. Eating a final feast of buttered sliced pan tea. Scarcely having noticed the erection that was his last. Shaving his face to marble. For the icy laying out, spraying with deodorant for crushed armpits. Someone today is leaving home on business, saluting terminally the neighbours who will join in at the cortege. Someone is paring his nails for the last time, a precious moment. Someone's waist will not be marked with elastic in the future. Someone's putting out milk bottles for the day that will not come. Someone's fresh breath is about to be taken clean away. Someone is writing a cheque that will be rejected as drawers ceased. Someone is circling posthumous dates in the calendar.
someone is listening to an irrelevant weather forecast, someone is making rash promises to friends, someone's coffin is being sanded, laminated, shined. We feel this morning quite as well as ours. Someone, if asked, would find nothing remarkable in today's date. Perfume and goodbyes, a final will and testament. Someone today is seeing the world for the last time, as innocently as he has seen it first. Thank you.